This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and I'm here with my good friend and co-host Peter at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. This is Twin Peaks Investing number 58 after a marathon part one and part two podcast previously with John Newman and Phil Oakley of Investability. That particular podcast went down exceptionally well. We've had a significant number of listens for that. So thank you all for your very, very generous feedback regarding that. And we were absolutely blessed to have Phil and John on that particular podcast. And they've since launched their platform, Investability, and apparently it's going quite well, if not very well, regarding sign-ups and subscribers for that particular platform. So we're really pleased that we were able to help them with that particular launch. Pete, it's been a bit of a volatile week since we recorded that. I'm not sure what your thoughts are regarding it all.
Yeah, hello everyone. Yes, it's been an interesting time. I mean, you know, we were flagging on this podcast and I've certainly said it on tweets and on my blog and stuff that you know, markets are often soggy in the autumn and September tends to have a reputation of being the worst month. And, you know, we've had a little bit of a wobble and particularly last Monday. We're recording this on Wednesday, the 22nd of September, and the markets are now closed. We had a bit of a wobble on Monday and we've since sort of rallied quite nicely Tuesday and today, which is Wednesday. I think it's a little bit early to say that things are all back to normal and we can all be crazy bulls again. I'm about 35% hedged on my portfolio, which I'm, you know, very happy with that positioning. I mean, at the moment, I'm just sort of like, you know, seeing what's happening, looking at the charts and just getting a sense of when do I need to take my hedges off. And I mean ultimately I think by the time we get the year end the markets will probably be higher than they are now. That's just my sort of instinct on it. But I think just in the next few weeks or whatever, it could still be a little bit wobbly and we need to be careful.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was saying on the last podcast that my concerns around the markets are that we need to not be complacent because we've had it quite good. We've had quite a good run. We keep bumping up against resistance on the FTSE All Share, and the FTSE 100 was trapped in a bit of a trading range. So when we recorded on the 8th, I think it was, if I get the dates right, the FTSE that day had hit a high. Intraday high of something like 7122 or there or thereabouts, and then since then it's been there or thereabouts, trapped over the most of the 2 weeks below 7100, and that's for the FTSE 100. And then Monday, this week Monday, go back to the Friday of the 17th. I was having the Memphis event, which I will talk about a bit later on. And the markets had a little bit of a spike that Friday afternoon and didn't do too bad. And was sitting at 7,081, having been as low as 7,0730 or something like that, 2,7. So it's been a volatile Thursday and Friday of last week. So it was doing all right. And then Bosch, you know, in the afternoon, it tailed off on Friday afternoon. Everyone started to worry about this Evergrande situation and the debt was being talked about regarding that and all the rest of it. And then there's talk over the weekend about potential Evergrande contagion and all the rest of it. And everybody woke up on Monday morning, and before you could blink, the FTSE was down below 6,000. And 50, I think it hit eventually, didn't it, Pete, or something like that? 6,830 was the intraday low, or thereabouts.
Yeah,
and the unfortunate thing for me is, and I keep banging on about psychology to the point where everyone's bored about it, is having the awareness and the capacity to know that markets invariably, on occasions, will move significantly on one given day for a variety of different reasons. Lots of people sold on Monday. Obviously, we didn't see lots of tweets to say, I've sold, or I've sold that stock. But a lot of stocks were down 2, 3, 4, 5% on Monday. And lots of people sold into the carnage that was Monday morning before lunchtime. And the markets were sitting there at 6,850 for the FTSE. Lots of people were saying later on in the day, I'm all cash now. And I was like, oh, okay. My first day back from Oblivion on Friday to Monday and it's carnage. And I actually used Monday to purchase a stock that I already held and another stock, a brand new stock that I didn't hold before that came into my buy zone. So I used it to use some of my cash to actually make some purchases. And, you know, with regards to the market, this contagion that everyone's saying it's potentially a Lehman moment, I don't think it's going to be a Lehman moment. Because the majority of that particular debt situation is in their own currency. So they'll be able to sort that out and maybe even get some backing from the various governments. And since then, the market's ebbed and flowed. And we're now on Wednesday. And from markets being 6,830 for the FTSE 100, we're finishing today at 7,083, almost back to where the peak was on Friday afternoon. So the people that sold and sold and panicked and were running around hiding behind sofas and putting metal Kevlar, you know what I mean, battle armor on, I'm not sure, they're not helping anybody really, because they're causing panic and not helping people actually deal with the markets, because we have to remember that markets can be volatile and will be volatile, and the winners in the markets are the people that have bought good quality stocks and can stick it out for 3 years, 5 years, not 5 days, not 5 weeks, you know?
I think that's really important. I think it's really crucial not to get panicked out of good stocks. You know, when you have a really good stock and you have a price target that's significantly higher than it where it is now, just because there's a bit of a wobble on a given day, it doesn't make a lot of sense to dump it. Which is why I prefer to sort of hedge at more of a portfolio level thing. So I actually keep my portfolio intact, which, you know, I've put a lot of effort into building my portfolio over time, over recent years, and getting it to how I want it in terms of what I hold and the weightings of what I hold. And I don't want to be panicked out just because, you know, markets are a bit wobbly. So I hedge it at portfolio level. Yes, that means that when we have a bounce like today, I'm losing on my short, but I'm gaining on my longs, and I'm net long. I'm 65% long. So when the markets go up, hey, I'm happy. I'm making money. When the markets fall, I'm also happy because I'm not losing as much. So we have a bad down day, you know, my 30-35% short is offsetting that hit. So, you know, psychologically, it's just so much easier to deal with. And all I need to think about is, when do I put hedges on? When do I take hedges off? And that, it just simplifies everything. In terms of the, what was it, Evergrande or whatever they're called? I don't take a lot of notice of it. I mean, I think from what I picked up today anyway, it looks like that's all solved. It looks like that's an old problem. I often think there's, I think in general, there's a lot of falls in markets, you know, where we get a sustained fall, where the markets actually fall first. And you can see it in the charts. And, you know, I was saying a couple of weeks ago, whatever, that I could see that, you know, things were starting to give signs of weakness and that, you know, there was a good chance we were going to get a pullback. And as it happens, that's exactly how it's turned out. But you could see that in the charts. And no one had ever talked about Evergrande at this point. So I think a lot of the time, the markets fall, then all the talking heads and the gurus and the experts have to come out for an explanation so they can talk on CNBC and Bloomberg and be all knowledgeable and say why it's fallen. The reality is it's fallen because there was a bit more selling pressure than there was buying pressure, you know, so stocks went down, which isn't massively surprising when we've had what I would say is one of the easiest years for making money on the long side that I've ever known in my whole investing life of 22, 23 years, whatever it is. But then I think there are times where, yes, the market falls are obviously for a reason. And that is like the credit crunch. It's like COVID-19. You know, those are great examples where, yes, there is a clear reason. But I think a lot of the time the markets just fall because, well, they always fall in the autumn. They always fall in the spring. I mean, it's not exactly rocket science.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about this one is they've known about the debt situation with Evergrande for a while. And the distress, unfortunately, for the Beijing financial regulators spread a bit faster and a bit quicker than the regulators were expecting. So they've had to step in, and it's put pressure on them to try and stop the contagion, which is what I think they're trying to do now, if not they've done it already. But the difficulty is that those creditors, there's going to be some domino effect regarding those creditors. Obviously, they're going to lose a shed load of money. But they've got to be careful that they don't do too much regarding those creditors, because they've got to be seen to be fighting bad debt and not you know, rescuing bad debt like before. So it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks. I think the beauty of it is that, you know, it's not essentially, I don't want to say it's isolated to China. There's going to be some creditors, obviously, overseas regarding any sort of financial issue. But I think the beauty of it is that the Beijing regulators have stepped in. It's dealt with it. You know, I was saying to you about using the measure of the FTSE All Share, and I've always talked about the level of 4,000 on that. Yeah. And when we were speaking on the 8th with John and Phil, it was sitting at 4,108 or thereabouts that was its peak during the day of the 8th, the intraday high, should I say. And then it just traded in a bit of a range over that 2 week period. And then it got to Friday afternoon of last Friday, and it was sitting at 4,077. And wallop, Monday morning, of this week, it was a sub 4,000. It was down at 3,956, Pete. And bizarrely, you know, given the contagion seemingly has been dealt with, and we're now fretting about how much gas we're going to have or whether or not we've got enough CO2 to make crumpets, the FTSE All Share is now sitting back at 4,081, almost again back at the level above the intraday high of Friday afternoon. So where's the market going to go the rest of the week and the rest of September? I don't know. What should you be doing regarding your portfolio? Should be looking at which stocks have recovered, yeah, since Friday. Yeah, Monday's drop, massive. Everyone's portfolio has been hit. Look in your portfolio, which stocks have recovered since Monday's intraday low. The ones that haven't recovered, have a look through your portfolio and try and find out why has that not come back with the rest of the market. And if it's a case of any sort of supply issues, inflation issues, blah, 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 have a look and consider, is this a quality stock that I'm going to be holding for the next 3 months, 6 months, 2 years? And if it's not, and you haven't got the conviction in it, have a think about whether or not you should be freeing up some cash to invest in another stock in your portfolio that's going to weather the storm better going forward, or investigate a new stock. Yeah, you don't have to hold a stock forever, 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 hoping it's going to come back to profitability, because some stocks don't. And it doesn't matter how many people on Twitter are championing that stock or ramping that stock. If it's not going to return and give you a profit, it doesn't matter. Just ignore it, because the reason why they're ramping and pushing that stock to you is to try and get a better exit than they possibly could get today. Yeah. So just have a little look at it and at the market. The rest of September is going to be very, very interesting, and so is October, because we've got a lot of news coming down the pipe. We've even got some news on Friday regarding what the Fed's going to do in the US, so that could impact the markets. Very interesting times going forward. And like you say, it's been a relatively calmish year so far, Pete, and the first bit of a wobble on Monday, and people were throwing out everything with the bathwater and selling, panic. You know, got to master your psychology, folks, because that's what's going to enrich you, is reading and finding out what are your weak spots regarding investing, not listening to the next person ramping a stock or talking about the same stock every day. It's boring. Yeah.
So true. I mean, on the technicals, the thing that I'm really looking at today, so, you know, as I say, it's Wednesday 22nd. We've had a big bounce today, and the FTSE 100 stopped, closed, bang on the 50-day MA, and just below that 7,100 level, which seems to be quite a bit of resistance. The other interesting thing about it is there's no volume. The volume is absolutely minuscule. So that shows that the bulls haven't got conviction. This was a big jump, but with no one really behind it. So that suggests that this is a bit of a sort of false bounce. The thing that I'm really focused on more than anything is the 13-21 day EMA, the exponential moving average. The FTSE 100 is still very much in bear mode. We had a bear cross, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, whatever it was, and that's very much in force. If you look at the US markets, they are all, well, the Dow did a bear cross about a week ago. The S&P 500 did a bear cross about 3 days ago. I think the NASDAQ has pretty much done a bear cross, you know, today, yesterday, whenever it was. With the NASDAQ and with ones that have just done a bear cross, the bulls now need to get a grip, and they need to push it up fast so we don't get into a situation where the bear cross and the bear mode gets really cemented, because those 13-21 EMAs are massively predictive. So I don't want to be hugely long when the 13-21 EMAs are telling me I need to be short.
Yeah, but my caveat with all of that, Pete, is that there's always opportunities for stocks or good
level. Yeah. I mean, I'm actually looking at buying a share tomorrow. Yeah. I will probably buy a share tomorrow. And as usual, it'll be on my website and everything. It's one I've been stalking for ages. I want it for my income portfolio. I already own it. And it's got a lovely yield, and it's a brilliant company. And I just think, yeah, now you've given me, it's given me some technical signals that are saying, right, this is a good time to buy it.
Okay, cool. And that's the beauty of doing the research and being prepared and waiting, like you say, stalking it. You know what I mean? You don't have to chase these stocks. I mean, I wanted to touch on, Pete, there's been a couple of people sent me DMs, and there's one person who I reached out for, who's basically decided he's going to take a bit of a long walk with regards to the markets for a little while. And what raises my concern is when people, you look into their portfolios, and a lot of the stocks that they've got are essentially momentum stocks. And the problem with momentum stocks is that if you are late to the party in that momentum stock, you're buying it near multi-year highs or 52-week highs or whatever, then, you know, if you hold it long enough, it goes on to having another high and another high, another high. But when it's exhausted all of that, and if there's, you know, unfortunately some bad news, the share price could fall very quickly back to where you bought it. So you're sitting there with zero sort of gain. Or unfortunately, if there's a profit warning, or, you know, like BOTB we've spoken about before, and other stocks, you end up with the price being down 10, 15, 30, 40, 50%. You know, there are people that bought BOTB at, I don't know, £17, £20, and thought they had a bargain, and is currently sitting at what, £7, if not less? Yeah?
So
if you've got a portfolio of momentum stocks and they've all rolled over, then you really are in a hiding to nothing. And I think some people have been exhausted by the markets, because each time they think they've bought themselves a momentum bargain, it ends up costing them dearly. You know, I had a conversation with somebody talking to me about Boohoo, and they mentioned the fact that, you know, when we did that Mellow Live, I don't know how long ago that was now, Pete. Was it last year?
Do you know what? It's probably about 3 years ago.
No, the Mellow Live that we did when we spoke about BOTB, Boo, and the concerns about the factories.
Yeah. Was that just online? Did we do that?
That was just online. Yeah.
That's so funny. I don't even remember doing it.
I think that might have been last year, if not the year before. But the share price has gone nowhere. It's probably around the same level it was then, but it's gone up, it's come down, it's gone up, it's gone down. Oh. And now it's sitting
I hold
low.
It. Tell me about
but,
it.
Yeah, lots of people hold it. But that's what I'm saying. Lots of people bought it, Pete, nearer to £4. You know, and it's sitting down at lows now. And people are saying, well, it's cheaper. And I'm going, yes, it's cheap, but... You know, they've got so many different issues that are headwinds against them that you don't know whether or not, you know, the £2.50 level is going to hold. And if it does hold and it returns back in vogue and starts to be profitable and gets rid of some of the litigation and all the other issues going on, then it could be a £3, £4 stock. But who knows?
Well, you know? I mean, that's the view I'm taking. And, that you know, I still think Boo is a very, very good business. I think it's addressed its issues around modern slavery and all that kind of stuff very effectively. I think it's an absolute leader in social media marketing. Its growth rate is stunning. I mean, yeah, there are issues around fast fashion, and I think that is a real problem. But, you know, again, they're sort of starting to move towards the recycled and the green side of things. So I think they're very good at not sleeping on their laurels. I think, you know, they have shown a history of when there's a problem, they address it. And I think that's a good thing. And I'm very happy to hold it.
I completely agree with you. My concern with it is that lots of people bought it at £3.50 and are now sitting at 30% plus loss. And they want it to be nearer to £3.50 rather than £2.50. And it's a case of when will that happen? It could happen within the next 3 months or next year, Pete. But the problem we've got, and we've spoken about it before, is that a lot of people aren't long-term investors, Pete.
Oh, yeah, you know, totally.
They're buying it for the next 10% and 15%, and they're championing the stock that it's going to go to a fiver, and as soon as it moves 5%, 10%, they've sold it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, I mean, the way, you know, you were saying there about people who effectively just have momentum stock. So let's just be clear what we're talking about. So a momentum stock is something that really is in a major uptrend. It just keeps going up, and we all know those kind of stocks. I mean, I'll name one now, Gately, GTLY. I mean, I was astonished today because when I looked earlier, it was up 7.6%. I hold it, and it's turned out, I mean, I've had to be really patient with it, but my goodness, it's turning out to be an absolute little belter. So I'm so pleased with how it's going. But it's a classic momentum stock. If you look at the chart, it's just got this, you know, cracking uptrend for, well, basically since March 2020, when we had the collapse. But the thing is about momentum stocks, and to me, you can simplify the way of buying these momentum stocks. You've just got to have a valuation filter. So if you see a stock that's had a damn good run and, you know, is really got momentum behind it, you've got to say to yourself, well, what is the valuation like? What is the forward PE? What is the 2-year forward PE? What is the dividend yield like? You know, what is its growth rate like? Can it, has it got much debt? Is it net cash? Can it sustain a high valuation? You know, and basically anything over 20 as a forward PE should have you questioning the valuation. Anything over 30 as a PE should have you really questioning the valuation. So if you're buying a momentum stock that's been rising for 3 years and it's on a forward PE of 45, don't be surprised if it kicks you in the arse.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few of those, Pete, and I think the one that's got people really, really intrigued, and I see being tweeted and discussed all the time, is Games Workshop, and it's like every day is Radio Goo Goo, every day is Radio Gaga. You know, it's
like Gorgor.
There's lots of balls, mate, and you know, and the news came out this week, and it wasn't. I don't think it was that great, to be fair. The share price bounced back. It's still. It's drifted back up again, but if and when the news comes out that's not great, there's going to be carnage because there's so many people own that stock or have bought it at quite lofty prices, Lots of different income streams could come to the pipe, and they could do exceptionally well, and they could be up 50% higher 3 months, 6 months, a year from now. But if those figures don't come in and all these supply costs and all the rest of it impact that stock, honestly, I really do worry what price people will get for that stock if the carnage arrives, you know.
Well, I'm looking at the on SharePad, yeah. I'm looking at it on my tablet, and it's got forecast PE 29.1, and then 2 year forecast PE 26.5, forecast yield 2.1%, 2 year forecast yield 2.4%, and it appears to have a bit of cash, so that's good. I mean, you know, is a forward, what did I say, 24? I think I said a forward PE of, sorry, forward PE of 29. That's fairly pricey. I mean, if you've got a forward PE of 29, the profit needs to be growing at 29% a year. So people need to look back and think, well, has it been achieving that kind of growth rate? How long can it achieve 29% growth rate? Because that's pretty high. I mean, looking at that valuation, I wouldn't have said it was crazily overvalued if I held it.
I don't think it's crazily overvalued, Pete. I just think lots of people have bought that stock. And when
if
it doesn't deliver, lots of people are looking to exit that stock. It's got a big spread. It's got low volume. And when the big volume turns up on a downside, there will be carnage. So I just hope and pray that it continues to deliver for all those shareholders. Because if it doesn't, boy, oh boy, watch out.
I think the way I would personally deal with this is I would not buy it now. You know, if I was a fresh buyer, it's too high for me. You know, when I'm buying on a PE of 29, I'll stop this at a damn good run. You know, I'm taking quite a bit of risk there if I'm buying as a fresh buyer. If I held it, I'd probably have a nice profit because I would have bought it on, like, you know, a lot lower PE or whatever. What I'd probably be doing is thinking, I'm going to be top slicing this, top chopping this, taking a bit off because I feel like my risk has really increased, you know, and it's become a bigger part of my portfolio. That's how I'd be handling it. Would I sell it outright? I might not, you know, it depends. Sometimes you do sell outright, but I definitely wouldn't want this to be like, you know, more than 15% of my portfolio or something. Or for me personally, I wouldn't want it more than about, God, more than about 6 or 7%, you know?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay, Pete, anything more you want to say on the volatility of markets or any stocks? I'm going to move on to update people regarding what happened on Friday.
Let's move on to Friday because we got loads of stocks to talk about. Got some other things to talk about. And I've got a lateral thinking thing that I need to clean up because I haven't mentioned it for weeks and people are desperate to know the answer.
People are desperate to know an answer to a lateral thing that you mentioned ages ago?
Oh, mate, they're clamouring for it. You would not believe. Oh, it's just non-stop. I get texts all day, direct messages. What's the answer? We're all
keep them onto your text, Pete, yeah? Don't bring them on here, yeah?
Oh, man.
Folks. Folks, I'm bringing you up to speed regarding Friday. It was an absolute, it was tour de force, mate. It was absolutely fantastic. It was brilliant. It went beyond my wildest dreams in a sense of how well it could have gone because I was nervous. I was frightened. Yeah. And I don't really do a lot of fear. You know what I mean? I don't do being that sort of way. But I felt like the weight of the world was on my shoulder to deliver this for Memphis. And Elric, Lemming Investor, and I had put so much work in putting this together over a very short space of time. And, you know, I was dealing with this the Leicester side of it, and everybody that I spoke to over the past 6-7 weeks said I was mad to try and put this event on. It needed 3 months to 6 months to organise and all the rest of it. And I said, nope. It needs to be done now. It needs to be done in the middle of September because there's a risk that Boris is going to come and lock us down again. And I'm not going to waste all my time, energy, and, you know, sacrifice stuff I should be doing for it to be told in October, November, December, January next year that we're not going to be able to do it. So off we went. So bizarrely, we had something like, I think with the people that came, went, and were registered, but so on and so forth. We had 105 guests at
That's
the event.
That's brilliant. That is brilliant.
So absolutely chuffed to bits. Some of them had registered with Elric's various websites that he's on, and not registered onto the Eventbrite page. So I was like, whoa. So it was really, really good that the numbers stacked up for the people that had supported us and sponsored us and so on and so forth. We had fantastic food from the Chutney Ivy, an Indian restaurant, which I'm actually going to tonight for something to eat.
I thought, because I looked at the pictures and I could see some food in the pictures, and I thought, that looks Indian.
Yeah, man, it was lovely food. One of the best Indian restaurants, if not the best Indian restaurant in Leicester. And I say that as I'm biased because I know the owner.
What's it called?
The Chutney Ivy.
Chutney Ivy, and what road is it?
It's called Shaf, the guy who owns it, and award-winning restaurant. But the main thing for me, Pete, was the brilliant presentations from Poolbeg Farm and Open Orphan. Both CEOs were fantastic, delivered, got asked tough questions, answered the tough questions, stayed behind, and other people just came to their tables and asking them questions, and they were there throughout the event and stayed as well. Then, honestly, mate, we had the World Cup rugby UK, Britain, UK, England, sorry, rugby World Cup winner, Stephen Stompson, MBE, on stage. And it was what he shared, Pete, regarding his life, his journey, essentially being, he's diagnosed now with early onset of dementia because of brain injuries and concussions that he's had playing rugby at world-class level. And he just shared some insights about what's going on and what he's seeing now regarding the world of concussion and all the rest of it, and being able to remember stuff and not remember stuff. And
it's funny because it's getting so much more focus on.
We all know
about the football one, don't we?
Yeah, it needs to, because people are losing their lives, mate, and young sports men and women are being impacted, and their lives are being shortened in so many different ways. And with the likes of Stephen, there's like, I think there's a 10, 12 year gap where he simply doesn't remember. He doesn't remember being part of the World Cup, which he won. But going back a little bit, it's like Liam, I'm there sorting out the table, sorting out raffle prizes, all the rest of it. He pulls out a picture, a framed picture with Martin Johnson, who used to play for Leicester Tigers. And it's the World Cup 2003 winning blah, blah, blah. And I said to Liam, I said, have you gone and bought that because we got Stephen Thompson? He went, no, it was in the storage room. It's been in the storage room about 2 years.
Amazing.
I was like, what? I said, you know me and mindfulness and law of attraction and, blah, 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 blah. And you do things and put things out in the world and this happens. He said, yeah. I said, do you get the connection? I said, Stephen Thompson. We didn't know that we got Stephen Thompson, right? X amount of weeks ago. You've had this in your storage cupboard for how long? About two years. I said, it's 2003, Liam. He says, yeah. I said, Stephen Thompson's from 2003. He went, yes, I know, Pete. I'm like, oh, you don't get it, do you? we just rounded this massive circle from this person who we didn't even know anything about 7 weeks ago. And he's had this in his storage cupboard for 2 years, which is what Stephen Thompson had participated in and won. Oh, mate, I was just like blown away.
Waiting for the ideal moment to come along.
Absolutely, mate. It was just phenomenal. But the brilliant, brilliant event. Lots of great people. Stephen and Mike McGeever, who was on stage with him, absolutely rocked the actual stage. People just leaning in to hear every single word they had to share about Stephen's journey. And absolutely, absolutely phenomenal. Lots of beers were drank. I drank water all night, by the way, and a Coca-Cola about 12 o'clock. And then we spent the time clearing the room and dusting down everything and making sure it was ready for the next day for other people to use. But the beauty of doing this event was that on the night, with the raffle and the other auctions that we did, and Mike McKeever gave us this this framed picture, Ernest Hemingway signed picture and poem that's in it. It's worth about $4,000. He said, right, there you go, you can have this. Auction it tonight. I said, I don't think we've got that kind of audience, Mike. He said, see what you can do, Get four figures for us if you can. And the money will go to Memphis. And I was like, okay, we'll see what we do. So we're doing this auction, no buyers. We move on.
Oh, no.
I auctioned and I sold it to the Eileen Richards. Hello, hopefully you're listening to this. And she's the lady that's in charge of the East Midlands Chamber. So sold that to her, the signpost of it for Martin Johnson. And sold that. Later on in the evening, this chap comes over to us and says, I'm going to buy that World Cup picture because of the event. And this was after Stephen Thompson had spoken, because I think he was moved by what Stephen Thompson had said, because everyone was moved and everyone got up and clapped Steve and Mike after the presentation he'd given on his life and everything else. And he said, I'm going to buy it for £1,500.
Oh. And I
was like, wow. So the deal is, he's put down £500. He's waiting for, I think, I'm not sure which share it is of whether it's Poolbeg or Open Farmer at a certain time, has to double. And he'll come back and then give the other £1,000. That's £1,500. I said, right, okay, if it doesn't double, you've now donated £500 to Memphis. Are you okay with that? And he's like, yeah, fine. You know what I mean? But Mike was saying to him later on, this picture is probably going to be worth about £7,000 in the next 2 years. By next 2 years.
Oh, exactly.
So with the bar money, the auction money, and the raffle money, yeah, we'd raised £2,001.80. Okay.
Cool.
With regards to the event and all the sponsorship and all the other stuff that we've put together over the past 7 weeks onto the amount, we've raised about £10,000 there or thereabouts, all told. And the rest of the money has just come from the Twin Peaks Challenge that we've been doing via this podcast. You know, we've had probably about, excluding you, me, and a few people that have done multiple donations, probably had about 150 people so far that have donated to the Twin Peaks Challenge, but they've probably raised about £4,000 from those 150 people. So I want to say thank you to ever so much for all the people that have supported every single aspect of what we've been doing. Me, Pete, Lemming Investor, and all the other people. I want to give a big shout out for ShareScope, London Southeast, Powder Monkey Brewery, who bought the beers that everyone had on the night. I want to thank Memphis for all their support, Liam DC and all the team. And there's so many more people, you know, that really, really supported us through all of this, and all the sponsor money, all the partnerships. And we couldn't have done it without the brilliant people that actually turned up and made it the best event that Memphis has had since they opened their events day. So I'm absolutely thrilled. I just want to say thank you all and God bless you all.
Oh, it's just, I mean, it's just fantastic to hear. I mean, you know, I know the effort that you, Pete, put into it. You know, I know how hard you've been working. I know the late nights, the frazzled brains, the podcast we start recording late because you're about an hour after you should be. We you know, I know exactly how hard you've worked, and you've been absolutely outstanding on it. And the thing is, people think that, like, oh, yeah, it's just an event. You just, like, get people there and away it goes. It is so much work. I mean, I've arranged events myself in previous lives, and it is so much work. And it's a classic project management thing where you just continually come up against problems all the time. You know what I mean? And like, you know, sort of like an hour before the thing's due to start, you find a sort of massive fundamental problem that no one had told you about. And, you know, it's just the nature of these things. So, mate, well done. And the fact you've raised all that money for the kids, and also, you know, 105 people have been fortunate to go to this thing. They've had a useful night. They've learnt about Open Orphan, ORPH. They've learnt about Poolbeg, POLB. They've had a chance to talk to the CEO and whatever. And, yeah, you know, what a great event. And, mate, top marks for doing it.
Thank you. I mean, for me, the evening was transformed when Stephen Thompson came on stage, and he's just so chilled, so laid back, so grounded, and just went like, and just spoke so eloquently about the difficulties and the impact and the joys and the despair and everything. It was just so from the heart, Pete.
Mm.
Could not make it. It was like, oh my gosh. You know what I mean? And he shared, he was so candid about everything. You know, and I know full well, you know, that he's got a few projects on board he's doing going forward. And when these individuals and these sort of people do these big, you know, after dinner speeches and all the rest of it, it costs several £1,000 for them to be guested at, right? And people are paying 50, 60, 100, and £150 to go to these things, right? And they turn up, they get a canapé and a glass of fizz, and it costs them £150 to turn up to the event. And these individuals are on stage for 40 minutes, an hour, and it's done. That's it, done. We had an event that started at 6 o'clock and finished at 11 o'clock, Pete. Yeah, and it was free.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah? awesome.
So we've done brilliantly. And next time people want to see Stephen Thompson at an event they have to pay for, they'll have to pay 150 quid, if not 100 quid for it. You know, so we're fortunate now, Pete, that, you know, with all the stuff that we've done, and Elric's done and all the rest of it, we're sitting at £14,376. Regarding what we've raised for Memphis. And we've not given up yet, guys. We've got until the end of December. So if you haven't donated yet, please, please consider just, you know, throwing a couple of pounds or whatever you can afford onto the Just Giving page, which is justgiving.com/fundraising Twin Peaks Challenge. Please, please, please consider joining the Twin Peaks Challenge army as we march on to £15,000 or more.
And more, and more, I'm sure.
And more, because what I'm trying to do with all this fundraising is to put in a significant bit of kit into the Memphis Hub so that the young people, the young disabled children, can have this in their unit and use it from day one to year two to year five to year 10, so other families going forward can benefit from this fundraising. That's my goal, really, is to impact and do something positively for the children that are disabled in our community. That's the whole purpose of this. None of this money is going to end up in anyone else's pockets, but the children are going to benefit. The disabled charity will benefit.
Nah, that's brilliant.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEAKS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the Twin Peaks promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Mate, on the subject of Steve and the sort of, you know, Steve Thompson and the sort of fragility of life, and how, you know, we mustn't take anything for granted, and that my view on things is that, you know, as soon as you can get yourself in your life doing what you want to be doing in life rather than, you know, being a wage slave or whatever. I mean, if you like being a wage slave, if you've got a job that you enjoy and you're passionate about it and it gets you up in the morning, you absolutely love it, then brilliant. But if you're someone who's in a job, you don't really enjoy it, it's getting on your nerves, you know, you've got to find a way of escaping that, because the thing is, you just don't know how long you've got on the planet. And that sort of brings me into this, what I want to talk about here, that I've mentioned it before, this sort of idea of, it's like my portfolio, my personal own portfolio, my, you know, all my sort of like money and stuff. I've sort of like got to a situation that I would call getting critical mass. Or I'd call it almost getting escape velocity. And it's the idea that I retired. I mean, I'm 56 now. I retired when I was 44. Yeah. But I actually retired probably a little bit earlier than I wanted to, ideally. I mean, I'd sort of felt that, you know, I wouldn't have minded working a few more years just to have built my pot up a bit, you know, got more earnings and, you know, got more earnings and grown my portfolio a bit more and whatever. But the way that, you know, things fell, you know, I had a chance of voluntary redundancy from Fujitsu, where I used to work, which I took, you know, which was brilliant. But when I did it, I was definitely tighter on my pot than I, ideally wanted to be, you know. And of course, one of the problems that you have when you become a full-time investor and you're effectively retired is that, you know, you're spending money every year. So it's like, I always put out at the end of the year, well, it's usually comes out early January, I put out a blog on my website and have done for the last 7 years, which I call the scores on the doors. Yeah, so I'll do, so you know, start of next year, I'll be doing the scores on the doors 2021. And on there, I put on there how much money I spend. Now, the thing is that the number I put on there about what I spend, that's really my sort of living expenses. So roughly speaking, I probably spend around £18,000 a year on living. Yeah. So that's like, you know, my rent, my heating, my food, you know, buying clothes, buying beer, whatever, you know, 18 grand a year. Because I live on my own, I don't have family, blah, blah, blah. But the thing is, my actual spending is probably quite a bit higher than that. It's probably nearer, I don't know, 23, 24, 25. In terms of, I need to find cash for that actual, you know, 23, 24, 25,000 quid. So what that means is that my portfolio has to generate cash for me, you know, so I've got money I can spend. And this actually puts quite a drag on a portfolio. So imagine a situation where you know, you've got your portfolio and you can get that cash from dividend payments, yeah, which just come into your account, and that's easy because you just take them out, yeah, and you can just spend them on what you want. But the other way of doing it, obviously, is that when you top chop something, or when you sell a share, whatever, you get cash, and then you think to yourself, well, do I need to take some of that cash out so I can eat, you know? And the thing that really helps me is that when my Spreadbet account is going well, like it has this year, it's fantastic because it generates cash. So as long as you know what you're doing and you control it, it generates cash brilliantly. And that's helped me so much this year. I've taken so much money out of my Spreadbet account. But the point is, when your portfolio is a certain size, and you know, listeners can figure this out for themselves as to what size portfolio works for them or whatever. One of the problems you've got is that you may be, let's say, for instance, you have a portfolio and it's generating £30,000 on average a year of gain. Yeah, not of cash, of gain, right? So the value at the end of the year is you know, 30,000 quid higher. You've had to take 25,000 of that out to eat. You know, if you were like me, you'd have to take 25,000 of cash out. So it means that only 5,000 quid is being reinvested. You're not getting the sort of benefits of reinvestment, which are really crucial, important thing of growing a portfolio. But because I've had a couple of really good years, I mean, this year I'm absolutely flying. And last year I had a good year. And as a result, I've generated a lot of money above my 25 grand that I need to live, yeah? And as a result, that extra money has gone into my pot and made my pot so much bigger. And I feel I've now got to this, what I would call sort of critical mass, where the portfolio's got big enough. And now I can be reinvesting quite a lot of money every year. So let's say, as an example, instead of having, say, 30 grand a year and you've got to spend 25 of it, you suddenly get to a position you might have, say, 50, 60,000 a year and you're still only spending 25. So you've got then, I don't know, 35 grand or something that then gets reinvested. That makes a massive difference to performance of your portfolio. And it's almost like this compounding effect that it's got this critical mass, it's got this scale, and you can really crack on and really push the portfolio higher. Did that make any sense?
No, I like the sound of that, Pete. I mean, I always have to play devil's advocate with these things, because The beauty of what you said is that you've had a good run so far or over a certain period. Two things regarding that. You know, we have had a good run since 2008, effectively. Yeah, so we're now 13 years in. And as bull markets go, it's much longer than that, probably. So my caveat, twofold, is the current concerns regarding inflation, which means that your cost of living, my cost of living, everyone's cost of living.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
those
absolutely.
That are working currently, I've just recently been told last week or the week before last, that the national insurance and other payments are going to go up. Their cost of care are going to go up. They're going to have to contribute more, et cetera, et cetera. And also, you know, there's going to be times, and there's been years in the past, you know, obviously last year, very briefly, albeit, the market's spanked all of us. So your returns, my returns, aren't always going to be as good as the previous 1 year, 2 years, 5 years or 10. So it's almost going back to the investment trust sort of things where you squirrel some of that money away so you can pool it into the years that aren't very good. Are you with me, Pete?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I've been doing very much is that, you know, I've got a lot of money in the Prudential with profits bond fund thing, which is great because it's like a sort of slightly different kind of investment and it's sort of a bit of safety. I've got a lot of diversification because I've got my income portfolio as well as my WD-40 and whatever. But I've also trying to hold more cash now and you know, and obviously I inherited a house, which is going to, well, yeah, I've inherited a house, but well, a part of a house, but that's going to be something for the future because we got to get around to selling it and whatever we're going to do, we may not sell it. I don't know what we're going to bloody do with it. But the point is, it's like, I think, I mean, for me, over the last 12 years or whatever it is, you know, Mark Bentley, great guy, and Roger Green on both on Twitter, they worked out that I'd been doing 12.2% CAGR on what I call my base portfolio, right? But that's actually without reinvestment because I've been taking money out. So that 12.2 could have been a little bit higher, like maybe 13, whatever. And I think with the hedging I do, with the diversification, whatever, I think I'm pretty reasonably well placed. And yes, I will have bad years. But I think going forward, I've got in a position where I only need to make like 1 or 2% on my portfolio, and I'm absolutely laughing. You know, it's become that easy for me in a sense because my pot's got bigger enough now to have got this scale, to have got this critical mass.
Yeah, I think like you say that if you do reach critical mass, it is good because you need less to actually get the same, you know, generate the same sort of return. You know, so you know if you are sitting there at I won't throw figures out because I don't want to embarrass anybody. But, you know, so you need to generate 25 grand a year or you need to generate 35 grand a year. It becomes easy. You need less and less percentage. You know, if you're starting out and your pot is 35 grand, you know, you need 100% return for that 35 grand to be there after costs. And unfortunately,
you can't reinvest. That's the trouble. Yeah,
and unfortunately, for some people who are starting out, who have got less than 35 grand or 5 grand starting out, they do tend to gamble more. They do tend to take higher risk with that 5 grand because they're starting out. But when you've got to a certain level, actually what you're trying to do is preserve that capital and just add to it incrementally, you know, small increments. And it actually does boost it once you compound it. You're not looking to double 300, 400 grand each year. You're looking to make sure you don't lose part of that 400 grand.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So yeah,
if you do get 10% on that 400 grand, happy days, you've made 40 grand. You know, you're not looking to lose 40 grand on that 400. It's really, really important. And I think you have to have an element of prudence. I think, unfortunately, Pete, there is a lot of people, and we've seen some of them on Twitter, that have got 400 grand, half a million pound portfolios. And I look at some of the stocks that they've got and I'm going, and I look at the weighting in some of those stocks who have got large, you know, significantly valued portfolios, and they've got some significant weighting to what is, I would class as quite high risk stocks. You know, my high risk stocks are in my portfolio as well. Of course they are. And I've got some right, you know, poor ones as well that have done absolutely, you know, crap. But they make up a tiny percent of my portfolio.
That's the thing. I mean, you've got a massive weight in an AstraZeneca, and that gives your portfolio a real bedrock. I mean, it was interesting the last few days that there was one day, wasn't there, this week, where the markets were really ropey. AstraZeneca was up 6%. You were laughing.
Yeah, Monday, markets got spanked, mate, and and then AstraZeneca was up 6%, like you say, and I looked across my portfolio, I was going red, sea of red, and then I looked at AstraZeneca, I was like, whoa, happy days, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's
fortunate, mate, because one day it'll be down.
You say fortunate, but actually, it's your prudent management of your portfolio that, as you say, you don't have loads of money in one tiny little high-risk company. No. You've got loads of money in something that's very solid and very decent and pays a nice dividend, and it gives a real bedrock to your portfolio. And I think that's just – it totally makes sense. And I do a similar thing, but not quite to the extent that you do, because I don't have quite such heavy weightings, I think, in things like Glaxo and AstraZeneca and various other boring stocks I've got. But boring stocks – are extremely important in a portfolio, and then you add, you know, smaller positions in more racy things, and that totally makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I always caveat it with it saying that we've all got to find our own way. There's lots of different strategies out there. Everyone's doing every single thing different. They've all got different goals and ambitions and what they want to achieve with the portfolios. And you've all and every one of us have got to do what we're happy with. And, you know, you and I will sleep differently at night. You know, I can sleep soundly.
I sleep on the front, mate.
My portfolio.
Does that make any difference?
What matters to me is that I can go to bed and not worry in the morning that, you know, half my portfolio is going to be smashed to pieces because, you know, something's happened regarding one particular stock. We've all got to do what we need to do. And everyone's getting a lesson every single day. And I see people in the morning saying, oh, that's great news regarding that stock. And then next thing I know, it's down 5%, 10%. You know, so you have to read the RNSs yourself. You have to learn how to analyze the stocks yourself. You've got to have the conviction and the wherewithal to buy a stock when no one else wants it yourself.
Yeah.
And see if you're right. You know, and the greatest aspect of investing is actually, for me, the researching and finding those odd gems. And it's you that's found it. You know, it's you that found it, and eventually the market agrees with you.
There's a lot of enjoyment in that, isn't there? No doubt about it.
Absolutely. You don't need everyone else agreeing with you on Twitter. You don't have to agree with everyone else on Twitter. Find the stocks, you know, sail your own course and see what you can do. And the more that you learn, the more that you learn. You know what I mean? I was speaking to a chap that I've only got to know recently. I'll give him a shout out here now. TCS Investor, yeah? The Common Sense Investor. And he replied to me, we're talking about conviction and oversold stocks and hot stocks and all the rest of it. He said, you know, they are missing out on the real joy of investing. Do your own research, reaping what you sow. Yeah?
I mean, that's one of the beauties of what we do. It's like, you know, we get a reward for the efforts we put in. You know, it's not like when you work for a big bureaucratic, you know, massive monolith company, where, you know, you put in loads of effort and loads of people up the chain from you who are generally often quite useless. They're the ones who get all the credit. They're the ones who get all the rewards. With this game, it's down to you. You get the rewards. Or if you don't put the effort in, you get the kick up the arse. And that's how it should be.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, mate, Pete, we're on the hour, mate. Let's kick out some stocks, mate. Go for it.
Well, one that stands out to me, I think it reported today, TMG, the Mission Group.
Okay.
I mean, it's just, I don't hold it. It looks really cheap. It's on a forward PE of something like 10 falling to 8.5. It's got a bit of dividend yield. It's got a tiny bit of debt, I think. But that just looks cheap. I mean, they had a really good update today, and I just think that is too cheap in this market.
Okay, I'm trying to recall. Is that a media-related group, is it?
Yeah, media marketing, that kind
media
of thing.
Media marketing.
Yeah. I just think it just looks... You got any you want to talk about?
Well, I think for me, Pete, one of the interesting stocks for me has been one that I think a lot of people are aware of. And it's often, I think you've mentioned it a couple of times, Pete, in various conversations, and I think people need to keep an eye on it. And it's Drax Group, right?
Oh,
because what we've been talking
about, DRX,
mate, yeah. And obviously, it's one of them companies which I think a lot of people have looked at in the past, and it's just been sliding under the radar, and now it's on everybody's radar because we're talking about potentially this energy shortage, Pete. Yeah, going forward into winter. And essentially, Drax owns and operates the Drax Power Station, the UK's largest coal-fired power station based in North Yorkshire. So their main activity, obviously, is operating the station and trading electricity that's produced. You know, if we have problems going forward regarding power, energy, blah, 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 this is going to be a company that actually does quite well. So I'm just saying to people, you know, keep an eye on that particular stock. It's had a good run. Since last March, and I don't hear anyone talking about it, you know, and that's what always piques my interest. What are people not talking about? You know, why is this stock up 85% in the past 12 months and I never see a tweet mentioned about it? Yeah, I hear Games Workshop every day. Yeah, this stock has outperformed Games Workshop by a long mile in the last 12 months. No one's talking about it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because, I mean, Drax has got DRX, it's got some right awful history. Like, it effectively went bust about 8 years ago or something. And the thing that gets me about it is they're doing this biomass whatever thing.
Yes,
where
indeed, Pete.
They're importing wood from, like, Scandinavia and then burning it in the power station. It just strikes me as bonkers. And I don't know, for me personally, it's not a stock I'd be comfortable with, but I can understand what you're saying, that, you know, it's had a flipping good rise and it's got momentum and it may be worth looking at. I mean, I think it's risky.
Yeah, and this is it. We don't have to agree, Pete. You know, we've got a situation where everyone's flapping on Monday, Tuesday, going online to various places and platforms to try and check if they can get, you know, fix their gas prices and all the rest of it. You know what I mean? And this is a company that's going to benefit from all of that. You know what I mean?
Well, it's more than that. It's more than that. I picked up on something that they're saying that, you know, the country's got a real problem with instability of energy supply, you know, because the government's gone headlong into renewables and it hasn't sort of figured out that sometimes the wind don't blow that hard and sometimes the sun don't shine. And it's just become a real problem, and they've got no gas storage capacity anymore, and we've got all sorts of problems with gas supply and gas prices spiking. So you can see a situation where they're going to have to start using coal again in Drax, or because they've still got some coal powered.
Yeah, I mean, but like you say, most of their power, Pete, is being generated from biomass and hydro, not gas. So it's going to benefit from the rising electricity prices. You know what I mean? So they're going to do okay, I think. You know, and they're going to get upgrades.
You know,
so it's one that I haven't looked at enough, Pete. And it's one of them that's just sailed by me without me even seeing it. You know, would I have bought it down the line because of its history? I probably wouldn't have done. But, you know, I'm saying to people, keep an eye on the stocks that no one's talking about.
I'll very much linked to that thing. I noticed Grid, GRID.
Yes. Yeah, another one, another benefactor probably.
Was it Gresham House? It's like Gresham House run a fund that invests in battery storage. And we're not talking like a couple of AA batteries or anything. We're talking about mass battery storage of energy that's produced by like wind farms and stuff, so they can store it to release it to the grid when it's, you know, when demand spikes and it's needed. Grid came out with results the other day, I think, and it had like, I think it might have done like another share issue or whatever. But I still think it's I still think it's a really interesting, boring income play kind of thing. But it's also got a bit of a green theme to it, you know, which is very zeitgeist, very of the moment. According to it doesn't say, but I got a feeling it's about 4 or 5% dividend yield, I think, which, you know, it's a nice steady yield, and it'll probably keep rising, and they'll they should get more battery storage facilities. I just think it's an interesting one, that.
I agree with you. I think it's going to be one of them that's going to be in demand, Pete, given what we're with the present situation that we've got. So, yeah, it's definitely one to keep an eye on. And like you say, if he's got a yield of 4 or 5%, only needs to go up another 4 or 5%, and you've made a good compound in 10%. So, yeah, so it's definitely worth looking at. The only caveat I would have with that, and I've said this in the last podcast with John and Phil when we were on that, that we had them as guests, is that it's sitting currently at a premium. And a lot of them are sitting at lofty premium. This isn't a lofty premium. It's currently at 13% above premium of its last updated NAV. But that could easily go higher, Pete, given the current situation that we've got. And at present, it's yielding 5.62. So it's still a chunky yield. It's yielding now at 124. That's pretty handy, mate. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, again, what we were talking about earlier, for an income portfolio, for a big, chunky, boring stock, you can see where the growth will come from. So not only are you getting a good dividend, you're also going to get a bit of growth, as you said. Mate, another one that tripped over my vision was Wilmington, WIL. Do you know that one?
Not one on my radar, Pete. Go for it.
Yeah, well, this had results the other day, I think. And it does, like, you know, training stuff. So, like, sort of training for companies and training courses. And, of course, they've benefited from the shift to online sort of learning and whatever. Looking on SharePad now, it's on a forecast PE of 15.2, a two-year forecast PE of 13.9. You get a 2.9% yield, and that should rise to 3.2 the year after. Obviously, you need to look at the forecast and sanity check and think, is this sensible? I'm going to be honest. With the way they're trading, it doesn't look bad at all. And it's got a bit of debt, but I wouldn't have called it a problem. I think they're absolutely in a sweet spot, and I think it's an interesting company. I don't hold it.
Okay. Right, I'm going to throw another one out here. I don't think we've mentioned any stocks in this particular segment that we either of us own. And I hope you don't own this one, Pete. It's Up Global Sourcing.
Oh, I got that. No, I haven't. I'm lying.
Stop. Good. So the ticker symbol is UPGS. And it was an interesting announcement. I think it was Monday. They've signed a licensed brand endorsement with Weight Watchers, or formerly known as Weight Watchers, now WW. So I think, given the global market for Weight Watchers, that could be very, very handy for them going forward over the long term. Obviously, they've got their kitchenware brand and all the rest of it. It's going to collaborate with Weight Watchers and to promote value for money products to help customers prepare and cook nutritious meals. So you can see the reason why they've tied in with them there. So, you know, the range includes fryers, health grills, soup makers, slow cookers, blenders, knives, utensils, and so on and so forth. I think over the long term, that sort of relationship could enhance their branding. It's these sort of things you have to look for. That aren't necessarily massive RNSs and people that just fly under the radar. But over the long term, I think that could help UPGS. I don't hold it, but it's probably worth having a look to see what happens to that over the long term.
Looking at SharePad on that one, UPGS, forecast PE 19.6, two-year forecast 14.8. So there's obviously quite a lot of growth in earnings expected there. So it makes sense for people who hold it or people who are looking at it to try and understand why those earnings are likely to jump so much. Little bit of borrowing, nothing much. 2.4% forecast dividend rising to 3.4. I like this stock. I mean, it listed, I don't know, a few years ago. It did well at the start, and then it sort of tumbled a bit, which they often seem to do after IPO. But since that, it seems to really got its act together and been doing well. And the thing to think about on this one, if you don't really understand it, is just go to a Robert Dyer shop, because all the stuff they sell is in Robert Dyer's. They do all that kind of, you know, kitchenware. Is it Tefal? Tefal, I think, is one of the brands they've got. Yeah. You know, they've got all these kitchen appliances kinds of brands and whatever. And it's one of those sort of boring companies that no one ever thinks about, well, who actually supplies the likes of Robert Dyer's? And, you know, even like, I don't know, Lidl, maybe not Lidl's, but like, a lot of the supermarkets and things that have like a little, you know, they have the little bit of cookware or whatever, they probably source it from like global sourcing. So yeah,
probably. I mean, as with all things, you've got to caveat what I've just said, because it's up 71% year to date, Pete. And over the last 12 months, up 124%. So it's had a really good run. The 52-week low is 82 pence. The 52-week high is £2.38. And it's currently sitting at £2.06. So that's a long run, good run it's had. Maybe during lockdown, people buying up lots of their kit and doing, you know, redoing the houses and changing the utensils and all the rest of it. So they've had a really good run.
Looking at the chart, over the last 3 months, it seems to have got itself into a sideways range. But, you know, that's not necessarily the end of the world. Quite often, a sideways range after a big push up is just a precursor to the next push up. Yeah. But the sideways range could go on for quite a while. You never know how long it's going to take.
Absolutely. Well, that's me done for stocks, Pete. Do you want to add another one? We're on one hour and 8 minutes. Just a very quick one, please.
Right. I'm going to ramp one of my own stocks, right? I'm going to talk about Fever, F-E-V-R.
Make it quick.
I hold Fever. I really like it. I had an excellent update the other day. The thing that really stood out to me about it was that the US growth is really rapid. Everyone thinks of Fever as a sort of just a UK story. You look at, I think the UK grew its revenue by 4%, and in the US it grew by something like 30 or something, or 40%. I mean, the way it's going, the US bit will soon be bigger than the UK, and people have just totally missed that.
Pete, come on, do you really think that? I mean, they've obviously started from a low base. That 30% is from a low base. Do you think it could be bigger than the UK's base?
Oh, really? It's going to be massively bigger. I mean, you look at the numbers already, it's already nearly the same revenue now. Oh, and it's growing so much faster.
Oh, well, okay.
And also, they've got the Europe bit, which, you know, is also growing faster than UK. And they're doing stuff in Australia. It's what they call rest of the world. I think it's Australia, the Middle East, and somewhere else. So, you know, I think there's a load more growth to come. It's not a cheap stock, very highly rated. But I think, you know, it's one of those that you know, I can see in 10 years' time being massively bigger than it is today.
Okie dokie. All right, then. Ladies and gents, we're going to close this podcast here. I've got to go and take my boss out because I've been absent for the last 3 months. I've got to take her out tonight for a little treat, and the mini boss as well. So we're going to wrap up here. I hope you enjoyed this podcast with myself and Pete, who you can find at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. My name is Peter Higgins. You can find me at Conquest3 on Twitter. Whichever platform you are on, please subscribe on that platform so you don't miss out. And you also get this immediately when it's released. And also, if you can be so kind as to give us and keep giving us your wonderful feedback on Twitter, which is where me and Pete reside mainly. We can hear the good, the bad, and the indifferent. And that way we can improve on what we're doing. I can hear a little bit of echo on Pete's transmission today. So I'm hoping it doesn't ruin...
I had baked beans last night. That's a problem.
So I hope it doesn't ruin your listening pleasure of this podcast. Pete and I, we're back again in 2 weeks' time. We look forward to you giving us the feedback. We hope you enjoy it. And once again, thank you all so much for your kind considerations, thoughts, and best wishes regarding the event and your brilliant feedback from those that enjoyed the event. Really appreciate it. And thanks again for all the comments that you've made regarding the money that Pete, myself, and Lemming Investor have generated so far for the Twin Peaks Challenge. We'll keep going. And if you can, please consider donating on the Twin Peaks Challenge Just Giving page. Take care. Stay safe. Do what you can for others. See you soon. God bless.
Cheers.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.